Hello, hello, I'm Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. It's Wednesday, so you know what that means. That means Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus will be joining us. Mike, how you doing, man?
Doing great. Excited for it to be Wednesday already.
Why not? Yeah, it's as good as any other day. Did you guys do anything crazy for Halloween?
Did not. I worked all day for Halloween. That's a little crazy, I guess.
That's exciting. My kids had a blast, as usual. There's pounds and pounds of candy upstairs, so... normal Halloween around here.
Mm-hmm.
How about this for a lead-in? A scary team right now, the Oakland Raiders. And
literally.
Yeah, they stink. Why?
There's a lot of reasons why. One, just roster-wise, they didn't have depth. It wasn't a deep roster to begin with, as well as they've drafted at the tops of drafts in terms of hitting on guys like Derek Carr, Khalil Mack, and Amari Cooper. They really haven't done much outside of the first couple rounds. They've really been just not a very talented roster outside of those high-level talented guys. So, you know, you start getting some injuries or those guys aren't playing up to speed, and all of a sudden you're relying on other guys to pick up slack, and they're just not going to. And then to put it bluntly, I don't think this offense is schemed well whatsoever. I don't think it's playing to their strengths at all.
Yeah, it seems like everyone's focusing on the coordinator change in Atlanta, but they're not talking about it in Oakland.
Yeah, they really – there's a lot of different things. One is they have – so they invested all this money. They have $40 million of cap space this year going to their offensive line. I think that's the most in the NFL, if not the most. It's like one or two. $40 million in cap space, and they – could run the same offense behind someone like Seattle's offensive line because they throw the ball so quickly. Derek Carr's average time to throw is 2.14 seconds, which we've never seen a quarterback under 2.2 for an entire season. It's just unbelievably fast, and like, he's never under pressure because it's a good offensive line. They're good in pass protection, and he's getting it out so quickly. Like, you can use some – you can. They could stand to have some longer developing pass plays, have something other than just the quick game, but – teams know they're just the quick game at this point. They have nothing else besides that. When Derek Carr does take more than 2.6 seconds to throw, he has the second lowest completion percentage of any quarterback and has the fewest yards of any quarterback on those throws. It's just awful. Like, they have no sort of downfield secondary, deep passing concepts in their arsenal at the moment. And that also comes with their play action. They're the worst team in terms of play action usage in the NFL, used at the lowest rate, have the second lowest yards per attempt off of it, the fewest yards in the NFL off of it, not even completing 50% of his passes, Derek Carr, this year off of play action. Those don't even compute. That's almost inexcusable for an offensive coordinator to be at that level in terms of play action, how they've schemed it.
Yeah, the play action aspect that you brought up makes zero sense. I mean, especially if you are going to invest heavily in an offensive line, you know, you have to establish some sort of running game. And you don't even need it. I mean, the big myth is you don't even need a running game to be an effective play action team.
Exactly.
Going back,
you just need to have set it up. You know, you just need to have run the ball at some point in the game to set it up. Yeah.
Right. Or a quarterback that sells it well. You know, I mean, going back a few steps. I know the knock on Carr coming out of school was, how well does he handle pressure? He's a spread quarterback. His last name probably didn't help him. So I think in turn, wisely, the Raiders invested heavily in this line. You know, we're not going to test our quarterback to make him deal with as much pressure as the average Joe. But it sounds like they've taken it to a ridiculous extreme.
Yeah, it's so far and away extreme that like it is hampering their offense with how little they attack downfield. Guys like Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, they're not able to generate as much space underneath because defense just are squatting on stuff. Defenses know it's coming. You know, defense know it's either, if it is a deep route, it's going to be just a straight go route that, you know, that they are going to get beaten with because the ball's coming out of Derek Carr's hands. They're really not too much creativity in terms of what they're running there.
Great points about the scheme, and I think that influences everybody, you know, that therefore all these players are not playing up to their capabilities on that side of the ball. But I also think Carr is a little bit to blame. Cooper's more than a little bit to blame. Lynch is somewhat to blame. You know, so it's a combination of things, like you said.
Oh yeah, and that's why they're so far regressed from a season ago. That's why it's just night and day the way they look. I think they're averaging like six fewer points a game this year, over five fewer points a game than they were a season ago, which is just unbelievable considering, you know, you thought they gained talent in the offseason. You thought they'd get better, and they've gotten the complete opposite way. So yeah, I mean, there's blame to go around, but they're not. No one's helping themselves at this point.
As kind of a side note, where do you put Carr in the first, second, third-year quarterback conversation? I mean, the Carr, Mariota, Winston, Dak, Wentz, Watson, Goff. You know the names. I mean, is he top of the list, middle of the list, bottom of the list? And has it changed since a year ago?
I'm not sure it's changed since a year ago. I think he is – I'd put him just slightly ahead of Mariota, Winston – probably behind Dak, and I guess guys have jumped him at this point. I would take Goff ahead of him at this point, just from what I've seen, just from the evaluation I had in Goff coming out of college. I thought he was going to be, I just, you know, had a higher evaluation or higher, thought he had a higher ceiling to begin with. So, yeah, I'd probably put him solidly behind those two and probably on par with about Wentz at this point.
Okay, Wentz is my favorite of that group, but I can...
Okay, yeah. I mean, like, you're splitting hairs there at the top to some degree, depending on what you value.
Sure, and I think Dak's been unbelievable this year, and I don't know why that hasn't been reported enough. The Raiders' D doesn't really come as a surprise. I mean, to me, it's been Khalil Mack, a couple other guys I'm kind of excited about, like Carl Joseph, and then question marks and awful linebackers.
No, yeah, I wrote in the article I wrote this week in the Washington Post about the Raiders. That was expected. You know, you didn't expect this to be the strength of the team, but I still think there are some, like, they brought in, so Conley's been hurt, knocked up a little bit. You know, they brought in Sean Smith, and those guys are, in my opinion, man cornerbacks. Those guys do their best work in man coverage. David Amerson, to some degree as well, and they don't play man coverage anymore. They've played it at the fifth lowest rate in the NFL, and so guys like Sean Smith, just they're paying him $10+ million a year for nothing. He's just not going to be nearly as good in zone coverage. And we've seen they've allowed, so on passes targeted 15+ yards downfield, they have the second highest completion percentage against in the NFL. There's just these monstrous holes in these zones because they have guys who aren't, you know, adept at filling, who aren't adept at zone coverage. So there's just a lot of issues all around.
Absolutely. I mean, clearly that's an issue. Do you think that they – I mean, the AFC is so watered down. I mean, I'm not ready to say that they can't get in the postseason, but I am willing to say that they can't fulfill some of the expectations that some people had for them as one of the best teams in the AFC.
Yeah, they'd have to sneak in as a second wild card at this point. And like I said, these things don't look like they're going to change. These are philosophical things that I think are wrong, and coaches rarely are willing to change philosophically in the midseason, you know?
It'd be nice if you could say something like, well, when they get Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack back from injury, they'll be fine, you know, but there's none of those excuses.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
All right, yesterday I went through my power ranks, and I talked about all these fantastic trades. Trade deadline was great stuff. The only one that happened after I recorded of note was Kelvin Benjamin going to the Bills. And I just want to give the listeners my thoughts on it real quick. This one surprised me. I mean, for two reasons. Is the Bills are buyers. Strange. He certainly fits their scheme, though, and McDermott knows him very well. He's certainly, you know, like they looked for in Carolina. He's a big blocker, run-first offense. They certainly had a need there. But I doubt that the Bills thought they would be buyers at the trade deadline. But it's odd to me, of all the moves that happened, the thing that I can't quite wrap my head around is, why are the Panthers selling?
My truthful opinion on this is I don't think he was good for that offense. I don't think he was a fit for that offense. I think there was a reason why the year he got hurt was Cam Newton's best season as quarterback. I just think Cam Newton far too often forced passes his way. When Cam Newton's not like, he's not a, like a, like I mentioned before on this podcast, I think how Deshaun Watson is a guy who will throw into contested coverage and give his guy a chance by putting it on his leverage. That's not Cam Newton. Cam Newton's not a guy who's going to accurately place a ball against a defensive back's leverage where only his wide receiver can get it. He's a guy who can hit an open hole down the field, you know, on a deep cross or on a deep post or, you know, an in route down the field. He can hit that when he sees a guy open, he can hit that. Kelvin Benjamin was just never a guy who you were going to see open. He has the catch radius that's good for Cam because Cam will miss high. He's not the most accurate of passers, but I don't think his strengths at the catch point were what fit Newton's style. And you kind of saw it, like his catch rate when targeted was for his career was only around like 55%. Like Cam Newton just they didn't have a great rapport. I never thought, and so I don't think they're so much worse off dealing him away.
I guess that makes sense. I mean, I've said since day one that I thought he was an overrated player. I mean, I don't think he's an upper-tier receiver. I think you said that well, that Newton is absolutely a see-it-and-throw-it guy. You know, okay, you're open, now I'm going to release it, and I'm going to throw it a million miles an hour, and it'll get there, as opposed to an anticipatory thrower. But what's the plan? You know, like, I'm cool with Funchess, and Olsen comes back. Is Samuel going to be a major guy, or what do you think the plan is now?
That's the one thing where I'm like, well, this year you're kind of leaving yourself somewhat hung out to dry in terms of you don't have an obvious, you know, replacement for him. I think maybe Christian McCaffrey plays some more wide receiver. They get him more split wide. You know, they use him a little more creatively than they have so far. That's my best guess, but I really don't have a beat on where they are going to go from here offensively.
Yeah, it's a little strange. I mean, I would think you see more double tight end sets when Olsen returns and McCaffrey in the slot and out wide, and maybe Samuel's role grows a little, but it does kind of leave you high and dry for now. But it was nice compensation. I guess you get something while you can.
Yeah, and I think they obviously have to go attack some speed at receiver this offseason.
Yes, no doubt. The other big deals. I recently wrote an article that I think the biggest, I don't know if I'd say winner, but certainly immediate contributor is Dwayne Brown going to Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I put Russell Wilson as the biggest winner of free agency.
Oh, okay.
His health is by far the biggest winner because over the last 16 games, the left tackle position Seattle has allowed 76 total pressures. I think that's the most in the NFL over that span. Dwayne Brown has given up half as many. So you're talking about almost three plays a game where just Wilson is going to be under pressure, that's three plays a game where you go from, you know, a ball that's thrown away to maybe a deep completion down the field. So I think that's huge for that offense. They was the biggest need of, you know, any position on the field for the Seahawks, and they addressed it. So with one of the better left tackles in the NFL. So I think they are definitely, at the deadline, big winners.
Yeah, plug-and-play guy. You know who he is. He's going to be fine. If you only get 2 years out of him, it's way better than what they've had. You make the worst position on the field and actually strength. And maybe you can even run the ball.
That'd
crazy,
be fun. Yeah. That's yuck, yeah.
I mean, not alone. But, you know, like you said, Wilson's a winner. But maybe they run the ball.
They should. They have to be able to do it better than they have been.
Right. I mean, I'm kind of holding out that CJ ProSize kickstarts it a little bit.
We'll see. I was a fan of ProSize coming out of Notre Dame. I think from a receiving perspective, he's still their best back. But they still have left guard, right tackle are still just – they're ugly. Like, it's not good. So
no,
The wild card still is, though. If they want to get back into more option football come playoff time, they always can do that with Russell Wilson. And we just seen it with what the Texans offense happened, you know, with Lamar Miller. You just get more space when guys are running, when you have to worry about the quarterback running it too. There's just a lot more space to work with as a running back. So we'll see if they ever decide to do that again.
And that brings us to Houston, who has just as bad an offensive line, in my opinion, as Seattle, and they just made it worse. But I think it just comes down to this guy wanted out. You got a nice piece of compensation back. You can't say no. But I also don't want Watson to deal with Wilson-like pressure for the next couple of years.
Yeah, so it's – on one hand, I love the deal for them. They're not winning the Super Bowl. This team, after J.J. Watt went out, you know, right. with the injuries they've suffered, this isn't a Super Bowl caliber roster. You know, they could make the playoffs if they had Dwayne Brown and, you know, everything clicks, they had a chance. But you know that this year is not going to be your year. And you know Dwayne Brown is not going to be there much longer, wasn't happy, whatever. You weren't going to pay him. You got a second and a third back from him, I think. Right? It was a second, third, and a fifth. Whatever they got from him was a good compensation for, you know, what they were looking at. And so now all of a sudden you can build towards, hey, maybe if things, pieces fall into place next year, we'll be able to make that run in the Super Bowl. So I like it from their perspective. But like you said, how much are you willing to risk Deshaun Watson's health for that future when it might not, you might not get there if he's under, like you said, Russell Wilson-esque pressure?
Yeah, and you know, in order to attain Watson and some other moves and to dump Brock, they had to give up draft picks. So they were a team very much in need of draft capital. And I'm with you. They're not going to win the Super Bowl this year, but they might win the AFC South.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, if you're a Texans fan, you're a little disheartened. But I think long run, all of a sudden, I think they saw all of a sudden we have this quarterback of the future. We have this guy. Let's actually build around. You know, let's stop playing that game for right now that we were playing for a while, and let's think about two or three years down the road when we could actually win a Super Bowl.
All right, there are two other major deals, and obviously Jimmy G goes to the Niners, Ajayi goes to the Eagles. What is your quick takes on those? And it sounds like you did an article, Winners and Losers. Who are some losers here?
I would throw in a third major deal into that. I know it wasn't really on the deadline, but Marcell Dareus going to the Jaguars huge as well. That one, that might be, in terms of quality of player, that might be the best player traded at the deadline. And
it fit a need.
Make a big impact. And yeah, they had nose tackle need, and all of a sudden that defensive line looks like, you know, Broncos circa 2015. How do you stop it? You know, how, what do you do to game plan against them? I don't know. So yeah, all those three trades. I actually called Jimmy Garoppolo a loser in all this because, yes, he gets to start now, but he was going to start week one next year anyways. He gets to start on an 0-8 team with no real hopes of winning it. You go 8-8, you know, you win your next eight games, you're still not going to the playoffs. So there's really no upshot of him starting these next eight games. But if he looks like Brock Osweiler or, you know, Mike Glennon over the next eight games, all of a sudden he costs himself maybe $20 million by getting traded here. He's not going to get a nice little $45 million deal if he does look terrible over these last eight games, and he's not going to have a lot of help to make him look good out there in San Francisco. Both their tackles banged up, not a lot of talent at wide receiver. All of a sudden, Jimmy G could struggle, and he might not be, you know, I know they gave up a second round pick for him, but at some point, you know, the sunk cost theory, 49ers might not give him a big deal if he doesn't look like he's worth it.
Yeah, and let's say he plays six games this year and doesn't look good, but we have a ton of money anyways. We'll franchise him, play him all next year, and they go 3-13 again, and he has a rough go of it. Then all of a sudden, he could be Brock Osweiler. You know what I mean? Like, his agent, you know, I'm a Jimmy G fan, and I'd much rather have him a bazillion times over Brock Osweiler, obviously. But I'm just saying in terms of value on the open market. But you're right. I think his agent, his wife, his bank account, would have much rather him been a free agent as opposed to now I'm kind of stuck in San Fran.
Exactly. I think that's why San Fran, everyone says, oh, you invested a second round pick in him, you have to, you know, sign him after this year. Well, I think they invested the second round pick in him because they don't want to have the Brock Osweiler situation on their hands. They saw what happened to the Texans. They had to give up a second round pick just to get rid of the guy. You know, they wanted to put themselves in a situation where they didn't have to do that. They didn't have to sign him to, you know, all this guaranteed money, put their franchise behind the eight ball for 2 years because of the deal they'd have to sign him for. Now you get to test him, see what he's actually like in your building. And if he doesn't perform, if he's not up to snuff, I think they're going to be more than willing to cut bait and just go for a quarterback next year in the draft or someone like Kirk Cousins.
And a key thing you mentioned there, though, as opposed to going the Cousins route, and it doesn't mean they can't go the Cousins route, is you get him in your building now. You know, there's a lot more time, real games, get him familiar with Garcon and Kittle and especially Shanahan, and Matt Ryan even struggled his first year in this offense, that you have all this extra time with the guy as opposed to Cousins or somebody you get in free agency.
No, I think it's, like, from the 49ers perspective, it makes a lot of sense. But like I said, from Garoppolo's perspective, this was probably obviously
financially.
Financially he wants to be out there. The guy wants to start. I think he's probably chomping at the bit. He could couldn't care less about, you know, the fact that he might be costing himself money. He thinks he's going to prove it and get himself even more money with this 8-game thing. But realistically, it's like you're going to a bad situation for a quarterback to succeed. And I know Kyle Shanahan has a great track record with quarterbacks, but not always in year one. You saw, like you said, Matt Ryan struggled in year one in his mm-hmm. offense. So things could go south for him. And we saw how quickly tides changed. Mike Glennon gets benched within his first handful of games after signing, you know, a $45 million contract. If you don't look good at the quarterback position, usually you're not around for long.
Yeah, and it did surprise me, though, that another shoe didn't drop on the Patriots front, that they didn't turn that pick or another pick or something into a pass rusher or a linebacker or something that would help them win now.
Yeah, you thought that could be coming with why they dealt, you know, why they got rid of Garoppolo so soon and, you know, are risking the fact that if Brady does get hurt, they're a little stuck here without a plan B. But
Hoyer's now a Patriot, in case, not that it's wonderful, but that's a done deal, just for those that didn't know.
But it's Belichick again. He just doesn't seem to care. So it doesn't seem to care if, you know, if he is trading away Jamie Collins for a mid-round pick, if he is trading away Chandler Jones. It's however he feels, and he's not going to give in to public pressure and public perception on what he thinks the team needs. So, yeah, we'll see how the defense goes. They've looked a lot better lately, so we'll see how they do down the stretch.
Yeah, and last note, NFC East, with the Ezekiel Elliott news and the addition of Ajayi, did the Eagles to the rest of the division gap widen substantially?
Yeah, that was another loser I had, was just any NFC team that isn't the Seahawks or the Eagles. You just fell behind in terms of talent. And they got, I think both got considerably, you know, objectively better. Guys who aren't at positions that are going to take much getting up to speed, so to speak. Those guys you can probably plug and play right away, and they'll be at the level that they were at their respective teams before. So, yeah, everyone's really fallen behind, and the Eagles look good right now. If Ajayi is running like he was a season ago, and he kind of was this year behind the Dolphins line, they just had one of the worst lines in football yet again. He goes to one of the best lines in football in terms of at least run blocking, even with Jason Peters out. They're still pretty darn good up the middle. And, yeah, they look scary on paper.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a nice addition on the cheap. I imagine that Miami got rid of him because they have knee concerns. And more than that, probably, is it didn't seem like him and Adam Gase just jived all that well from the start. And, you know, that he wasn't super happy there and they weren't super happy with him.
Yeah, very odd. A late fourth rounder, what they got in return is nothing. You know, that's about the point where picks start to be very invaluable. Not a lot of guys hit that late in the draft. There had to be something going on behind the scenes. Like you mentioned, there had to be something between Gase and him that wasn't working out, because he's a talented running back. Like, in those games where he went over 200 yards last year, he was unstoppable. You couldn't tackle the guy. And when he's on, it's scary. So to give up a talent like that for very little was probably the biggest surprise trade I saw at the deadline.
Yeah, and I know it's the first day in November, but it's kind of like you mentioned, it sure seems like it's Seattle and Philly in the NFC and Pittsburgh and New England in the AFC.
Toss in New Orleans into that mix, too.
I guess.
Big fan of what they've done defensively. And Drew Brees is probably the best quarterback still in the NFC. So,
yeah, I'll buy that. I mean, yeah, because, you know, Carolina got a little worse. I can't quite buy into Minnesota. I'm not quite on board with the Chiefs in the AFC. So, yeah, I can buy that, especially if you have to go to New Orleans in a playoff game. That doesn't sound like a fun little endeavor. Well, good stuff, man. This was a blast. We'll do it again next Wednesday. All of you need to check out Mike's work at Pro Football Focus. Follow him on Twitter. It is at @PFF_Mike, right?
Yep, PFF_Mike.
Very cool. Got it down pat. All right, this is fun. Take care, everyone. Over and out.